from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. We've got a jam-packed show today, and we're going to tackle everything from the Russian hacking to California's ridiculous anti-life bill, from religious freedom around the world to a changing of the guard at the State Department. So hold on to your hats. We're about to get things started. We're learning that Russian hackers penetrated the U.S. civilian aviation systems in early 2017 as part of a broad assault on the nation's infrastructure. Their ultimate goal was the electric grid, water processing plants, and other targets. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about it is Congressman Steve Russell of Oklahoma.
Congressman Russell, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's always good to be with you.
Let's start with this. I mean, this information is very troubling. That Russian hackers were going after the U.S. aviation system. This is pretty significant.
Well, it's not only significant in that, one, Russians would not be trying to target military targets, but that they would be targeting innocent life that could affect, you know, millions of people and all kinds of things. It just shows you the difference in morality and certainly values that we hold. But the disturbing thing is, you know, there comes a point where the United States is going to have to get serious about what constitutes an act of war. You know, when we see these cyber attacks, when we see people going after electrical grids, infrastructure, things of this nature, and they actually were to do something to try to shut it down, this isn't some people always talk about victimless crime with credit card fraud or this type of nonsense. No, there's still a criminal aspect to it, and there are victims to it. And it once again shows that the greatest threat that we face in the world today, in my view, is Russia. That they are innovators. They are certainly nefarious. And like a thief that goes around checking for unlocked doors, and they find one, and they'll wreck the place. You know, here we see them checking for unlocked doors. So we have to get very, very serious about this issue, and we got to call it out when we find it.
Well, again, the information coming out last week that they had breached more than a dozen power plants in seven states. This information now coming out public, of course, a lot of these targets had been hardened and preemptive defenses had been put in place. So there was no extensive damage done. But this shows that really, as you say, the nature of the aggressor here, these are civilian targets. I mean, what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, again, it goes back, I think Russia really has three motivations. They want respect. They would like to have it, as positive outcome if possible, but they'll take negative respect as well. And I think them getting around and meddling and shoving and doing nefarious things as a way that they can get negative respect. They also want security. Putin has consolidated his power through the use of oligarchs and other things where he now owns and controls the political process within Russia. Gone are the days of the early 90s where it looked like free and fair self-determination might actually arrive in Russia, but the reality is we see that that's not the case. And so they want domestic security, and then they also want external security with what they call the near abroad, flipping back former Warsaw Pact countries or former Soviet states that have self-determination, have been occupied by the Russians for a long time. They want to live as free countries, and Putin wants to turn all of those back. And then the third thing they want are good economics, and they want to do that through the use of their resources. But then they'll use those resources to strangle people, like with Gazprom and the other things. So we know what the Russians are up to. I mean, the good news is that they're very consistent. But we need to be very much on guard. And this is just another example of we cannot be asleep at the wheel or somehow think we have a reset button or somehow, the only thing that's been reset is the Cold War, sadly, because of the attitudes that have been exhibited by Russia, and we've had very little pushback on them.
The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joseph Dunford, Marine General, has repeatedly said, both in testimony before Congress and most recently he was over in NATO countries in Europe speaking about this, that Russia is the greatest threat that the United States and NATO is currently facing. Is this more evidence that that, in fact, is true?
Well, I think it is. You know, it's up to the chairman to not only be able to coordinate and certainly have our armed forces to defend our republic, but they also have to evaluate threats around the world. And of course, we think of North Korea, and we think of terrorism, and we think of a lot of different things. And, you know, mentioned China in that group, although I think that there's a lot more in common that we have with China. We might have some competition, and we might have some things that we're irritated with each other over. But the greatest threat is, I think Chairman Dunford has it correct, it is Russia. And you say, well, why is that? Look at these things. They have a cyber capacity and capability on par, if not better, than our own. They will absolutely do these bold and surprise moves if they see weakness, which we've seen. And now they're trying to drive a wedge into NATO and try to disrupt that to the extent any way that they can. And if they were to be successful there, Tony, ponder this. For 72 years more, we have had peace in Europe. That's not happened since Roman times. And so if that were to be disrupted and the NATO construct of nations were to somehow break apart and then it's everybody for themselves again, this is precisely the type of thing that Russia would take advantage of, and they would subjugate and put independent countries and peoples back under their thumb. We do care, and we are watching, and we will be vigilant, and we will stand up to them. They only want to dominate, not have people have better economies and self-determination and good trade and good business, which is like what the United States desires.
So, Congressman Russell, are you confident that the Trump administration is ready to go toe-to-toe with Vladimir Putin?
Absolutely. He cannot sustain himself for anything long-term. And, the thing that that you have to recognize when you're dealing with the United States or its allies is that If you just took our Western allies and the English-speaking countries, they constitute 6 of the 7 G8. They constitute 17 of the 20 G20. Collectively, the economic might and the military capacity, once we get re-energized and we get these countries, which the president has called them out on 2% for NATO and doing different things, collectively, there's no way Russia can withstand that. But we have to keep together. We have to stay together as a team. We have to, cooperate and work policies together. That's what's created these economic miracles, in Europe and a lot of different advancement and development is because they haven't had to focus on war. They've had 70-plus years of peace. That's a good thing. And people talk about, the defense dollars and all of that cost. War is a heck of a lot cheaper. I'll take peace any day. Peace is a heck of a lot cheaper, and I'll take that any day than war. We often lose sight of that in the preparedness. But right now, NATO and our alliances have worked, and we just have to hold together.
Right. Peace through strength. Congressman Steve Russell, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us
today. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
If you want to find out more about Congressman Russell, head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a tax-deductible contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at a Supreme Court hearing affecting crisis pregnancy centers.
Where is our country headed? Are we moving in the right direction? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Kellyanne Conway, Secretary Ben Carson, and Sean Hannity. Don't miss the early bird price of $99 at valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. The so-called Reproductive Fact Act, which became law in California in 2015, forces medically licensed pregnancy care centers to post signs with information on where women can go to receive free abortions. Earlier this week, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on the case, and we're pleased to be joined by one of Alliance Defending Freedom's lawyers from that case, Kevin Theriot.
Kevin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be back on, Tony. Glad to be here.
Now, you've been working on this case since day one. In your opinion, how did it go today before the high court?
Well, we really think it went well. I think the court understood that this is really a free speech case. And when the government is in the business of targeting organizations that they disagree with and then forcing them to say a message that contradicts what they really believe and the foundation what they believe, that really strikes at the heart of the First Amendment. And I think most, if not all, the justices understood that and were concerned.
I noticed that in the line of questions that were asked, and it was interesting. Mike Ferris, who's now president of Alliance Defending Freedom, a longtime friend, was representing the network of pro-life clinics. He was asked about, well, what about the requirement that many states have the right to know laws for those undergoing abortion? And I think he made a very good response to that question in pointing out there's a big difference here. We're not talking about a medical procedure that's being conducted. We're talking about even advertising. And one of the Supreme Court justices actually asked about a advertisement that just had two words, choose life. What was the response?
Well, you're exactly right. Justice Kennedy said, what if they had a billboard that said choose life? Would they have to put a disclaimer on there that basically drowned out that message in the same size font? And of course, they asked the state of California that question. The California eventually, after much hand-wringing and crawfishing a little bit, had to say yes.
I mean, I think that was so revealing because the justice said two words. Choose life. If you had a billboard that said choose life, here's what you would have to put on that billboard, according to California law. California has public programs that provide immediate, free, or low-cost access to comprehensive family planning services, including all FDA-approved methods of contraception, prenatal care, and abortion for eligible women. To determine whether you qualify, contact the county social services at, and then you have to list the phone number. And as I understand it, you have to do that in multiple languages.
Right. So the license disclosure, which you're talking about, that license centers have to give, has to be in multiple languages also, and has to be given to women when they come in for the first time on a visit, so that they're discouraged, really, from even developing a relationship with them. And they're essentially, as you mentioned earlier, referring them to Planned Parenthood for an abortion when their very purpose is to encourage women to choose life.
So this clearly is designed to stifle any type of advertising of these free services by these pro-life pregnancy care centers by, you know, just a word, two words, choose life. You'd had to have, you know, this paragraph and a half mandated by the state. So you would finally say, what's the point? Why even advertise? And so I think that part of that was brought out before the court today, and it did. And I wasn't in there, but just in reading about the questions from the justices, it sounds like the majority of them got that.
I think they did, and one of the last things that Justice Sotomayor said, that if this billboard, which only has two words, is required to contain this 29-word disclaimer mandated by the state, that's very problematic. That's a concern, I believe, is what she said. So all of the justices are really protective of free speech, and I think they saw eventually that this is a very dangerous law, not only for pro-life centers, but anybody who values speech. If
right.
The government can compel you what you can say, then all liberty is at stake and is at jeopardy.
So, Kevin Theriot, what's happened since this law passed in 2015? How has this impacted these care pregnancy centers?
Well, they've definitely been very intimidated by the law, because if they don't comply with it, they could be subjected to fines of up to thousands of dollars. And so many of them are very concerned. There has been at least some attempt to prosecute, a threat of prosecution against some of these pregnancies in L.A., and they are very concerned and very hopeful that the court will enter an injunction protecting them.
When do you think the court will rule on this case?
I think the court will likely rule the last week of June in a case like this. That's probably most typical.
This will be a big decision that will have implications across the country. Kevin Theriault, as always, great to have you on the program. Again, we appreciate all that ADF does to defend free speech and religious freedom.
You're certainly welcome, Tony. I appreciate you having me.
If you want to find out more about Alliance Defending Freedom, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with a look at the state of religious persecution overseas.
Who is speaking up for Christians in Washington, D.C.? For over 35 years, Family Research Council has been your voice for advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview in our nation's capital. Stand with us as we defend the truth and preserve the vision that our founding fathers had for this country. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest news.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Religious freedom is in global decline, including in the West, and violent religious persecution is on the rise. On Wednesday of this week, Tony Perkins was joined by Tom Farr, who was the founding director of the State Department's Office of International Religious Freedom and has served as the director of Georgetown's Religious Freedom Research Project. Here's Tony Perkins.
Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
I mean, we kind of know this, but it's always good to see it in the academic world from a standpoint of the research showing that there is a connection between religious freedom and stability in a country, which is beneficial to America's foreign policy and our national security.
Sure, and it's I'm glad you put it that way. It's almost common sense. It's certainly intuitive to a lot of us. And the America's founders understood this. You need religious freedom to have social harmony, political stability, even economic growth. William Penn, the founder of Pennsylvania, said, come to Pennsylvania. This is in colonial times. We've got religious freedom here. It's good for business, good for trade. He was right, and people came to Pennsylvania. Well, that's all we're showing with the data. The data prove that, you know, religious freedom can, it isn't easy to implement, but once you do it, it has all kinds of benefits for society. And, of course, we understand that it is both morally and on a humanitarian level absolutely necessary for every human being. And Christians believe people created in the image and likeness of God want to come, you know, God wants them to come to him freely, not through coercion. That's not the way Jesus worked. But isn't it interesting that the scholarship now proves what common sense suggests, and we're very happy it's out there.
Well, and, you know, we've always advocated here at the Family Research Council that social science is well done, prove truth. And that's what we're seeing here. And of course, America really is an example of that. I mean, of all of the countries, America, founded on Christian principles, is the most tolerant and the most open arms toward religious freedom, where people – I mean, if you're a Christian, you can't openly practice your faith in Saudi Arabia like you – if you're a Muslim here in the United States. And so – but look at how society prospers and the security that we have here, relatively speaking, to these other countries. Tom, I know you see this because you've been working extensively in the Middle East. I was at the end of last year in Egypt, met with the president, President El-Sisi, and Muslim country, but they are wanting and pursuing religious freedom for all. Now, it's not quite the same as we see it here in the United States, but they're moving in that direction, because they realize the connection with the stability that they need. This is a unique time for America to provide really the support, the encouragement, and even the cover to some degree for those leaders willing to pursue that path.
I think that's exactly right, Tony. And Ambassador Sam Brownback, who's our new Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, agrees with this. And I want to support him, and I hope all of your listeners will support him in this. The idea here is that religious freedom in countries that are just having all kinds of problems, some of them have to do with religious persecution and religious extremism in their societies, but as I said before, it's also economic. These Arab countries and others in the Middle East are having terrible problems, and it's common sense why this is true. So religious freedom, it's not a silver bullet, but it can help them. And the fact that people like El-Sisi and others are understanding this really creates an opening for American foreign policy that we have not, quite frankly, stepped into, and we certainly didn't under the previous administration. We now have an opportunity. I think we have the right man in place, and I think the new Secretary of State, once he's confirmed, will be supportive of this. This is important for our country. It's important for Christians and other minorities, as you say, who are being harmed. But it's also a national security interest of the United States. Think
right.
of religious freedom almost as a counterterrorism, a diplomatic counterterrorism weapon. If we could be successful in getting people in the Middle East to accept this and begin to implement it, move in its direction, we are undermining the possibility of the future ISIS, the future Al-Qaeda's, the spread of these virulent things that require the blood and treasure, have required the blood and treasure of our young men and women. So this is more than humanitarian. It really is a national security issue for the United States.
All right, Tom Farr, as always, great to talk with you. Appreciate all that you do on behalf of religious freedom around the world.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate being with you.
If you want to find out more about Tom Farr, head over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air by going to tonyperkins.com and making a tax-deductible contribution. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with the state of the Trump administration's foreign policy.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with the Family Research Council here in Washington, and we're defending and advancing the things that matter most, faith, family, freedom. Please stand with us right now. Our work depends on people like you who truly care about the future of our nation. You can make your gift by going to tonyperkins.com or by calling toll-free 800-225-4008. Again, our number, 800-225-4008 or at tonyperkins.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. As we've talked about before in Washington Watch, President Trump has selected Mike Pompeo to replace Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Joining Tony to talk about the impact of Mike Pompeo's addition to the State Department is the director of the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council, Travis Weber.
Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, just finished our conversation with Tom Farr about this connection between international religious freedom and stability in these foreign countries, which is a national security plus benefit for the United States. Sam Brownback, as we were talking about, gets this new ambassador for religious freedom at the State Department. And the selection of Mike Pompeo, current CIA director, being tapped by President Trump to lead the Department of State. He understands the importance of religious freedom. And we're on the really at the threshold of seeing a rebirth, if you will, of a focus from our State Department, from our federal government, on religious freedom as a foreign policy priority.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many who are hopeful that this could be the rebirth, that if Mike Pompeo becomes Secretary of State, this could really be a turning point on the issue. You know, we've had requirements in law that it be elevated in foreign policy, but really the ship, you know, the bureaucrats at the heart of our foreign policy and really, you know, having a lot of say in that area, that ship needs to turn. And someone in the Secretary of State role who really understands it, who has the right mindset on the issue, can really help us turn the corner. And I think a lot of people realize this, and this is why many people are so hopeful about it.
And Tom and I touched on this briefly, but When we talk about religious freedom as a foreign policy priority, and I know that I think I've read some criticism of Mike Pompeo. There was criticism made of Ambassador Sam Brownback that because now Sam is Catholic, formerly an evangelical. But that somehow evangelicalism is anti-Muslim when it comes to religious freedom. I mean, but when you look at true biblically based evangelicalism, it is more tolerant than any other religion on the globe in terms of allowing people to choose their religion. Obviously, Christians from a personal perspective want people to come to Christ, and we that's why we're called evangelicals, because we evangelize. But the fact is that as a foreign policy, I mean, this is more open to Muslim minority groups, other religious minorities being able to practice their faith and having the freedom to do so.
Yeah, I mean, so the people who want to criticize Ambassador Brownback in that regard should actually look at what's been done. Look at what he's done. He protected mainly Muslims in Darfur decades ago when he was involved in that crisis as a senator. He's made it one of his priorities to now bring attention to the persecution of the Rohingya Muslims in Burma. And you don't have many people doing this. Not many people are going around really focused on protecting these people who are being wiped out in Burma right now, and they're mainly Muslims. So if people actually look at what's going on, the evidence just proves that assertion to be flat wrong. Now, they want to use it to remove Christians who have a view of their faith informing their roles. They want to move those Christians out of public roles. But it's not true that that one believes one's spiritual truths automatically transfer into the public role. Of course, that's not true. And the Christians of all faiths should have a basis for believing that religion cannot be coerced and people mm-hmm. should be protected by civil government to believe what they want in civil society.
All right, Travis Weber, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.